Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, it's considered by many to be the kickoff to summer in the capital city. We'll hear more about this year's Columbus Arts Festival. And Jay Fox will chat with an expert about measles prevention. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective.
It is time once again for the Columbus Arts Festival. Greater Columbus Arts Council Chief Creative Officer Jamie Goldstein joins me now on Columbus Perspective to discuss this year's event. Welcome, and may I say, this is like my favorite event of the whole year in Columbus.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's kind of our favorite event all year in Columbus, too.
How long has the festival been going? I can't remember.
This will be our 63rd year.
That's exactly right. Now, the festival is free to attend. How are you able to sustain it without a gate fee?
So the Greater Columbus Arts Council is supported through the City of Columbus and Franklin County, and the festival is supported by wonderful corporate sponsors like AEP and Bath & Body Foundation and CAS and many, many others, and that's what enables us to make this festival free for the entire community.
Back in the 1960s, when this was conceived and first launched, what was the vision for the original festival?
Well, I wasn't there.
Me neither.
But, you know, I do believe that when they launched the festival, and it was on the State House grounds when it first began, they really wanted to bring the arts to the people. We're still doing that, I'm very proud to say. And it was a mix of artisans displaying their ceramics and their paintings and their weavings and performances. And we've really stayed true to that over the years. We've greatly expanded. Obviously, we spent a few years in the Discovery District when they redid the riverfront. But now we're back, I think, to our forever home. And we take up both sides of the river, right down on the Scioto Mile, the Rich Street Bridge, the Main Street Bridge, and much of the park space downtown with four stages, more than 250 artists, and a huge hands-on activities area for kids and families, and just tons of great food and drink. We have more than 40 food trucks this year, and lots of folks' favorite beverages, alcoholic and otherwise, from Pepsi, from G&J Pepsi here locally.
So the festival has achieved national recognition. Congratulations. What specifically were you recognized for?
We are recognized primarily, there's an organization called Sunshine Artist, and each year they send out surveys to artists who have participated in festivals all over the country, and they get to rank festivals based on how they treat artists, how they organize, how they market the festival, and many, many other indicators. And I'm going to humble brag here for a second. Artists love us. Artists love us because, and that's really because we have this amazing group of people. We have a very small staff at GCAC, but a very dedicated festival staff. And then we have a 100-person coordinating committee that works year-round to help us in all manner of things, whether it's artist market or security or beverages. And then we have about 300 on-site volunteers every year who, you know, we all come together and create this really wonderful atmosphere for artists and performers. We take care of them. We want everyone from our artists to our patrons, to our performers, to our volunteers to have a great time at the Arts Festival.
How do you find the artists? Do they find you or do you have to go searching?
There's sort of a system for that, and there's a national platform that artists, visual artists who are exhibiting artists, put their information into. We have an application process that starts in September of the year prior to the festival. We get about 1,100 applications from artists all over the country and the world, and then in January, we come together with a jury, and there's a 5-person jury that work in different disciplines that go through every single one of those applications and score them them and rank them to get us down to our 250 or so artists each year.
So you have your own version of American Idol.
More or less. It's what we call a blind jury. So there's no identifying marks on any of the images that the artists submit. They get to submit four images of their work, and then aesthetics are very important to us at the Arts Festival. They submit one image of their booth. And many of the artists who come back to us every year, but they also do festivals all over the country, and they have their own booths. They can rent booths from us, but they have their own booths, and they have really just a system down. To watch the festival come together and go up, as it were, we build this little city in the middle of Columbus for 3 days, is really a remarkable thing. And it takes all of us working together to make it happen and to create this wonderful environment for people to come and enjoy the arts.
Now, you mentioned you have four performances stages this year. Who's performing?
So we have great headliners this year. Each year we try and work with at least one big Columbus arts organization. And this year, Ballet Met is performing on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. on the Bicentennial Park stage. We have a favorite that's coming back. This will be our third year for the fashion show on Friday night at 7:45 on the Genoa Park stage. And then we're following the fashion show with Mr. Fahrenheit and the Lover Boys, a great Columbus-based band who does Queen covers. And then we have programming all day, every day. We have dance, theater, and music. The big local arts stage is going to have Joey H. He performed last year. He's also a fan favorite. DJ Moxie Martinez is going to be there, and just so many others. Dana, the Cordial Sins. We've got some really favorite Columbus bands lined up this year.
What's new on the menu for food this year that you're looking forward to?
Everything. No, we have some really great returning food trucks that people will love. Cousins Maine Lobster, of course, and we just have every kind of food that you want, whether it's funnel cakes or Eaton cookies, which just serves tiny hot, freshly baked chocolate chip cookies and milk and cold milk. We have ribs. We have really everything that you want you can find at the festival, whether it's sweet or savory.
Now, you said that patrons can consume alcohol at the event. How do you keep them from bringing it in?
We discourage that. We do not participate in the festival. Doesn't participate in the downtown Dora. So people can't, they can enjoy festival beverages that they purchase on site. They can't leave with them. And if someone is attempting to come in with a Dora cup, we kindly ask them to finish it and then come in and enjoy some of our wonderful Rheingeist beverages or Pepsi beverages at the festival.
Now, is this a kid-friendly event, or are there more specific times that are better for kids than others?
Nope, the whole festival, all day, every day is really kid-friendly. And I think it's important to, you know, the hands-on activity village runs from when we open each morning, which is at 11 on Friday and 10 on Saturday and Sunday, and to 7 p.m. each night. And then the festival closes at 10 on Friday and Saturday and 5 on Sunday. But the kids village, the hands-on activity village, is made up of these wonderful organizations throughout Columbus who come together to bring us everything from, you know, creating your own tote bag to watching your design turned into glass to coloring pages to painting a big set piece that Columbus Children's Theater brings to trying your hand at or your feet rather at tap dancing. And then we have the Children's and Teens Gallery. So one of the things that's a festival favorite and parents bring their kids back for every year. So we have two galleries that festival artists donate work to. Everything is priced $5 and under. No parents are allowed in the tent. There's a little kid-sized door. And kids go in and select the work that they want to add to their collection. So we are creating we are creating future arts patrons at the festival every year. And then, you know, we have started this year an accessibility page that really helps people navigate the festival for whatever it might be. We have a new accessibility map that lets people know where there are strong smells, like by the food trucks, loud noises or flashing lights, like by the stages. And we started a special Columbus Arts Festival story, which is aimed at kids, that answers questions like, what is an arts festival? Who will be at the Columbus Arts Festival? What do I do if I get overwhelmed by the sights and the sounds and all the tall people? And it really helps kids understand what it means to come to the festival. And that's one more way that we really hope parents can and caregivers can make the festival a comfortable and fun place for kids. We also have two sensory tents. We added one this year on both sides of the river, where if you do feel overwhelmed, adults or kids, you can step outside the hustle and bustle and just take a little break. And there's soft seating and, you know, sound machines and just things that let you recharge and head back out to the fun.
Can we bring our pets?
We ask that you don't bring your pets.
Okay. Really, I'll tell my cat he can't come.
I have, believe it or not, I have seen a cat on a leash. I have seen a snake. I have seen birds. I have seen probably all manner of animals at the festival. Really, you know, it's hot. The pavement is hot. It's crowded. It's just not ideal conditions for a pet. And we ask people to consider that. Of course, service animals are welcome. But for our other furry friends, we ask that you leave them at home or with a caregiver.
If folks want to go to a website to learn more, or they want to share this information with a friend or a relative, what's the best website to send them to?
Go to columbusartsfestival.org. We are also on Facebook, Columbus Arts Festival, on Instagram, Columbus Arts Fest. And any of those ways are great ways to engage. And, of course, we have an app, as everybody has an app these days. And you can go to your app store and download the Columbus Arts Festival app. And it's constantly updated. You can find everything that you can also find on the website. You can pre-shop by browsing our artist gallery. If you're really interested in jewelry, say, you can go and filter through artists and select jewelers and see what's going to be at the festival. You can see each stage's lineup for every day. And so we really try and put everything at people's fingertips so they can plan their trip. There's parking information. That's always a big topic. The garages that are close by downtown and rules and things about street parking. We want folks to be able to see exactly what is going to be going on and plan their visit so that they can have fun when they get there.
Last but not least, when is the Arts Festival this year?
June 6th, 7th, and 8th. And again, the hours are 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Friday, June 6th, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday, June 7th, and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, June 8th.
All right.
Everything's ready. We can't wait
to tell
people. And we just want everybody to say their prayers to Mother Nature. She's the last piece we're waiting on. But it's going to be beautiful.
We'll talk to Chief Meteorologist Jerry Martz and see if we can work out some kind of a deal. How's that?
I appreciate that.
There you go.
All weather favors, welcome.
All right. We want to thank Jamie Goldstein from the Greater Columbus Arts Council for joining us and talking about the Columbus Arts Festival. We'll see you there. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
The state of Ohio witnessed an outbreak of measles cases with 10 right here in Franklin County. Concern is still growing, given the rise in cases nationwide. The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is the largest philanthropic foundation focused solely on health in the nation. Dr. Rich Besser is their president and CEO. He's also the former acting CDC director, and he joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Good morning.
Good morning, Jay. Nice to be here.
Thank you for being here with us. Let's start with the basics. What is the measles?
So the measles is a childhood infectious disease. It used to kill more children around the world than any other infection. And the reason it doesn't do that anymore, and the reason it was basically eliminated from the United States, is that there is an incredibly safe and effective vaccine against that disease.
How is the disease transmitted?
It's transmitted through the air, and it is one of the most, if not the most, contagious diseases that children are exposed to. It hits children at a very young age, which is why it's so important to vaccinate children against measles on time. And it's very good at identifying people in a community who are not fully vaccinated. You know, Ohio, unfortunately, has one of the lower rates of kindergarten vaccination for measles. And what that means is that while there may be 10 cases of measles that have been identified so far, that number is going to rise, and I expect it will rise dramatically.
When you talk about the actual disease, how does it manifest? What parts of the body does it impact? And how do you know you have it?
Yeah. So you know, measles is known for a red rash. It tends to start right up at the hairline on the head and spread down. It's got fever. It's got cough, runny eyes and nose. It can affect a lot of different parts of the body. And so it can cause a problem with the lungs and set a child up for having a bad pneumonia. It can infect the brain and cause swelling of the brain. And it can be fatal in about 1 in 1,000 cases. The fact that with this current measles outbreak, we've already seen 3 deaths, makes me think that although we're talking about 1,000 cases, there probably are thousands of more cases that have not been diagnosed. The best way to prevent measles transmission in the community is to ensure that children are fully vaccinated.
And when we talk about children, what age group in particular is most at risk?
The youngest children are at the greatest risk. At the age of a year, children are vaccinated against measles. And that's because you want to make sure that protection is there when they're at the greatest risk. It is one of the routine child immunizations. There was a time in our world's history when measles killed millions of children around the world every single year. There was a time when measles killed thousands of people in the United States. But thankfully, due to vaccination, we were at a point where measles was considered eliminated from our shores. Being challenged by the decline in vaccination in pockets of the United States.
So I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio, and on my left upper shoulder, I have a very distinct scar from a measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination when I was a child. As a result, I did not get measles, and my kids, while they don't have the same scar, they also were vaccinated. Why are people not getting vaccinated if they know the risks that are associated with the disease and its high rate of transmission?
Well, you know, Jay, actually, that scar is from a smallpox vaccine. The measles, mumps, rubella vaccine won't leave any mark at all. But those of us who are over a certain age, I have that same scar on my arm. That's a sign of having been vaccinated against smallpox. And the reason that children don't have that scar anymore is that smallpox was wiped off the face of the earth. It's the only disease that has been totally eradicated, and it was done so by vaccination. Measles, mumps, rubella won't leave a mark. Oftentimes when children get that vaccine, they get a bit of a fever or a little fussiness or soreness at the site of vaccination. And that's because of the body responding to that vaccine and developing those protective factors. The challenge is that if parents decide that vaccination is not for them, it puts their children at risk, but it also opens the door to measles coming into that community and spreading to other children.
Now, wouldn't you think that if measles has made a comeback, that other diseases could make a similar comeback if no vaccinations are given?
They will. They definitely will. You know, we saw a really rough flu season this year. Part of that was because vaccination rates were quite low. We're seeing more cases of whooping cough around the country. Again, that's a disease that will spread if vaccination rates drop. There's been a worldwide effort to try and wipe polio off the face of the earth. But I worry that if people decide not to get vaccinated against polio, we will see that come back as well. These diseases, you know, one of the challenges is that when people aren't seeing them in their community, their desire to get protected against them goes down. And with that complacency, we see the diseases come back. And one of the biggest challenges we face right now is that we have a Secretary of Health, Mr. Kennedy, who did more than just about anyone before he was secretary to undermine parents' trust in the safety and the effectiveness of our vaccine system. And so I believe the best thing for parents to do and adults is talk to a healthcare provider you trust and get your questions answered so you can make the best decision for your family.
What are the risks of getting a vaccine? Why is the director, you know, he says he's no longer opposed to vaccines, but at the time he was very outspoken against it. What's the problem?
Well, there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation that's out there. Decades ago, there were theories about connections of vaccines, the measles vaccine in particular, to autism. Scientists looked at that, did the studies, addressed that, and found that there was no connection. But there were individuals who continued to spread lies about vaccines and those connections that were very worrisome to some parents. We're also seeing challenges right now because the government has pulled back a lot of the resources that states need to provide vaccines. Hundreds of millions of dollars that states use to support childhood vaccination programs and clinics have been cut. You know, just today, Congress is proposing cuts to the Medicaid program, which will make it much harder for lower-income families in our country to ensure that their children are fully vaccinated and fully vaccinated on time. These things all are a real challenge, and it's why I think we are going to see some diseases spreading that we hadn't seen in our communities for a very long time.
Are we moving in the direction of survival of the fittest?
Well, you know, I think we're moving in a direction of survival of those who are the richest, because we are saying that those who have the dollars will have a choice, and those who don't will not. That's different than survival of the fittest, and it's, you know, flies in the face of fundamental American values. We at the foundation believe that health should not be a privilege; it should be a right, and it should be a right that is available to everyone, regardless of where they live, regardless of their income.
How is your foundation helping?
Well, one is through conversations like this, you know, trying to spread information so people can make the right decisions for their families, pushing back on some of the misinformation that is out there. We also do support a lot of the research that looks at the impact of cuts in government funding. So our researchers have shown that you know, the Medicaid cuts that are proposed will lead to millions and millions of people across America losing their health insurance. And we've supported studies that look at, well, what is the impact of not having health insurance? And what it means is that people wait until they are sicker and sicker before they go for health care. And that's just not what we want to see in America. We believe that everyone in America should have the opportunity to lead their healthiest life. That is a fundamental American value.
Before I let you go, if our listeners want to learn more about the foundation, perhaps how they can help or possibly volunteer or even make a donation, where do they go?
Well, we're not looking for donations. What I would say is get involved in your community. Get involved in your community and understand the issues that are there. Decisions about whether children need to be vaccinated for schools are decisions that are made at the state and sometimes at the local level. And so ask those questions. I would not want to send my child to a kindergarten class that didn't have a high rate of vaccination and didn't require vaccination. So ask those questions and demand that your children and your family is in the healthiest situation possible.
All right. We want to thank Dr. Rich Besser for being with us today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
The state of Ohio has several initiatives to help those in a mental health crisis and those who may be considering suicide. Mental health is a huge issue here, and the number of people struggling with it may surprise you. According to the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, one in five adults live with mental illness. 1.8 million live with a substance use disorder. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is one of the critical resources for those in crisis. Since its launch in July of 2022, Ohio's 19 call centers have responded to nearly 540,000 texts, calls, and chats. The average, 19,500 per month. And 99% of those contacts are answered by Ohio-based responders. To help raise awareness, on Tuesday, state leaders unveiled a new specialty license plate featuring the 988 Suicide Crisis and Lifeline logo. For each plate sold, $25 will go to the Ohio Suicide Prevention Foundation to support local suicide prevention initiatives. Governor Mike DeWine says his goal with this license plate is to raise awareness that there is a lifeline for people in crisis.
We know that this number saves lives. The fact that people who call 988 in Ohio are talking to a fellow Ohioan, but also someone who has been trained in this area. The fact that we then can tie that person in to all kinds of different services in their local community. This is just an invaluable number.
You can buy a 988 license plate at deputy registrar locations and online at bmv.ohio.gov. Joining me now to talk about mental health initiatives in the Buckeye State is Leanne Cornyn, the director of the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. Director Cornyn, thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, so let's start with this. Why is it so important, and how important is it to have a month dedicated to mental health awareness?
Well, as you said, mental health is prevalent. Mental illness is prevalent across our state and across our nation. So having a month fully dedicated to raising awareness, to educating Ohioans about the signs and symptoms of mental illness, and helping to break down stigma is critically important. We know that 2.2 million Ohioans struggle with mental illness every single year, and we want everyone to feel like help is available and help is out there, and it's okay to not be okay and reach out when you need assistance.
How would you characterize the situation with mental health? Is it getting worse or is it getting better? And, you know, I guess the more people you hear from, that means they're reaching out for help.
Well, we know we've done a great job addressing stigma through the governor's real initiative with Beat the Stigma. We've really helped elevate the prevalence and the awareness of mental illness in Ohio. And more individuals are reaching out for help. But we also know that people might be a little bit sicker today than they could have been in the past. And that's why it's so important that we create a lifeline like 988 so that more Ohioans, every single Ohioan, has someone to call when they need help.
What would you say is the key initiative in the state for helping people in crisis?
Well, certainly 988 has been a huge lifeline for Ohioans who are struggling with thoughts of suicide, but really just everyday issues. Maybe it's a breakup, maybe it's financial stress, maybe it's the loss of a job or a conflict with a family member or loved one. Any crisis, as the person defines it, is a great reason to call 988. And as you mentioned, more than 500,000 calls, texts, and chats in the 2.5 years since we've launched this.
And who mans those phones?
We have 400 trained professionals all across our state at 19 call centers. We actually have the most call centers of any state in the entire nation. And we want to make sure that those call takers know the services and supports in their community. So when that person picks up the phone, phone and dials 988, we're able to connect them into the services and supports right in their backyard.
I think we've all probably seen the ads that you referred to, the Break the Stigma commercials that are on TV, online, on the radio. But now with the rollout of the license plate, which we can show again here, another tool to raise awareness. How important, or what are your hopes for the license plate?
Well, first and foremost, we just want more people to know that 988 exists. When we surveyed folks in 2023, about 36% of Ohioans knew that 988 existed. Now, that's double the national average, but certainly not where we want to be. So having license plates on hundreds and thousands of cars driving on our roads every single day certainly is making a connection with someone who doesn't know that 988 exists.
And then there's the financial side of this, too, because I believe it's $25 from every plate will go to the Suicide Prevention Foundation. So how much will that help? And then how is that money used?
Well, the Ohio Suicide Prevention Foundation is an excellent partner of ours at the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. We work with them incredibly closely to ensure that we're infusing suicide prevention programming all across our state that's relevant to our highest risk populations. So any additional resources will help us expand those programs so we can reach more individuals and prevent our suicide rates from going up.
In April, you and the governor announced that the state is expanding. It's called the Mobile Response and Stabilization Services, MRSS for short. Under this program, trained and certified professionals are deployed right to a child's location within 60 minutes or less. First of all, why do you believe that a response like this is critical?
Well, if you've ever known someone or personally experienced a child having a behavioral health crisis, it is really difficult to know what to do. You can take them to the emergency department where you may face long wait times in an environment that's really not therapeutic for that child. So having trained professionals to respond right to that child's home where they can deliver care in a safe and comfortable environment is game changing for our kids. And having this in every single county, every single family with a child facing a behavioral health crisis, having help no more than 60 minutes away, it's truly life-changing for our state.
And it's not just going to their home, right? It's
Correct.
Going to wherever the child is. It could be at school. They mentioned like at the playground, at the park as well, right?
Absolutely. We've heard stories of MRSS responders going to libraries, to schools, to emergency departments even, to parking lots, to the side of the highway. It's wherever that child is when they're in a moment of crisis, they'll respond if it's a safe location.
And also, it's not just that critical incident response, too. There's follow-up as well. I believe it's like 6 weeks of follow-up, and it's free.
Completely free. What's so unique about Ohio's model is that no family will receive a bill for these services because we want to ensure that that is not a barrier to individuals seeking out help. And you're right. It's up to 42 days of ongoing services and supports to help that family stabilize right in their home and community.
How would those teams be deployed? Is it through 988, through 911? How does that get kicked into action?
So we are integrating our 24/7 MRSS hotline into 988. So any family who's in need of MRSS services can pick up the phone and call 988, and our incredibly well-trained call takers will help to dispatch those mobile response services.
Also just recently, the Franklin County Crisis Center opened. How critical is that going to be in meeting those immediate needs?
Absolutely. We say at Ohio MOS that we want everyone in Ohio to have someone to call, someone to respond, and somewhere safe to go. And that crisis center is that last piece. It's that somewhere safe to go. If they can't be stabilized through 988, if they can't be stabilized through mobile crisis services, they may need a higher level of care. And that's exactly what that crisis center provides.
What would your final message be here as we get towards the end of May? Obviously, the awareness stuff doesn't just happen in May. What message would you want to leave people with?
That 988 is 24/7. It's completely free. It's totally confidential. And it's a crisis as defined by the caller. As I said, you don't have to be contemplating suicide. Life could just be feeling a little heavy, and you may need someone to talk to and process that with. So it's okay to not be okay. And there is always help out there when you need it through 988.
Director Lee Ann Cornyn, thank you so much for this perspective today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And keep raising that awareness. Right? Thank you so much. And once again, if you or a loved one is struggling with thoughts of hopelessness or suicide, you can call or text 988 at all hours of the day to talk to someone.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
The clock is ticking for state lawmakers to produce and pass a two-year state operating budget. The House passed its version, and now the Senate is working on it. The General Assembly has to present a final budget to the governor by June 30th. Last week, Senate Democratic leaders held a news conference to lay out their priorities and amendments for the budget, which is House Bill 96. Democrats say they have submitted more than 400 amendments to the proposed budget. They outlined four key areas of interest. They want to make sure the budget provides property tax relief that does not undermine public school funding, protects Medicaid, supports child care programs, and fully funds food banks and libraries for Ohio communities. Joining me now to discuss the Democrats' budget priorities is Senate Minority Leader Nikki Antonio of Lakewood. Welcome, Senator.
Thanks. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. I hope you are as well. So 400 amendments tells me there are many things the Democrats don't like about the proposed budget. So what's the key thing that you want to change, Senator?
Well, I think you identified it in your introduction. Truly, it's the fair school funding formula is at the top of mind and top of our list as a priority. I think everything else is hinged off of that, absolutely, for our communities, for our kids. And what my caucus is very concerned about, Democrats are worried that this budget would be passed on the backs of our children and our communities and our public schools rather than making the case for other priorities.
Well, now that the U.S. House passed a budget proposal that would cut roughly $700 billion from Medicaid, do you worry the same will now happen in Ohio?
Well, we're very concerned about that. And let's be clear about Medicaid. First of all, in the state of Ohio, Medicaid pays for 50% of the children who are born in the state of Ohio are born to moms who are covered by Medicaid. And then Medicaid covers their lives, their health care for the first 3 years. At least it has up to this point. If we are truly concerned about infant vitality. We happen to have one of the highest infant mortality rates in the country, then we would want to do everything we could to make sure that children, those babies, have access to health care in those critical first years of their life. So Medicaid, top of mind. As far as the expansion population that's now covered under Medicaid as well, these are working Ohioans, sometimes two and three jobs. You know, this idea of a work requirement, they're already working to even qualify. And Medicaid makes it possible for them to have maintenance health care so that they can show up every day for their jobs and be productive. I truly believe that if Medicaid is cut in the state and in the country, it is going to the change and the effect on the workforce is going to be something people are not even thinking about, but will be shocking. We also fear that what it'll do is make some of our, especially rural hospitals, close because they won't be able to provide the care, getting the support that they need. Their uncompensated care will go through the roof. And it's going to leave folks in all kinds of areas throughout the state of Ohio without access to health care, whether they have Medicaid or not. And hospitals are really going to bear the brunt of this. Right now, we have been able to use emergency rooms for emergency services. If Medicaid is cut, people are going to start going to the emergency room like we saw before for their everyday health care needs. They're going to wait longer. They're going to be sicker. It's going to cost more in the long run. This is very short-sighted. And what it shows me on the national level is that the people that made this decision know nothing about our health care system and know nothing about public health at all.
So what do you make of the proposal to provide $600 million in bonding for the Cleveland Browns owners to build a new stadium?
Well,
you represent that area.
I do. I do not think that's the answer for how we go forward with supporting our sports teams. I'm all for supporting our sports teams, but not this way. First of all, that $600 million is close to, it would take about $720 million to fully fund the Fair School funding formula. I've been told by Republican leaders early on in the budget process that the Fair School funding formula was not sustainable. And yet, the House sent us a budget that had $600 million for billionaire owners to enrich their franchise and move the Browns out of Cleveland into a suburb. And at the expense of the city of Cleveland and really cannibalizing dollars there in the city of Cleveland. So that proposal has a whole lot of problems. I'm hoping, and I know it's been tough, that that gets worked out. But the legislature should not prioritize giving billionaires money for their franchise over the children of the state of Ohio. My colleagues and I prefer to prioritize our children and our local communities first.
Senator Nikki Antonio, the minority leader, as always, thank you for your time today. I appreciate it.
Again, that's courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.